This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands and Antilles, directed from New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perron.
Well, hello everyone. It's really nice to have you with us again for the 55-minute edition of the program. At the beginning of March, I was in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania for the 25th anniversary of the SWL Winterfest, that's Shortwave Listeners Fest, which I have to say was a ball. Coming up in today's programs, we're going to look at one of the fest traditions. Yes, traditions. Pirate radio.
U.S. international broadcasting is going through a major transformation. Matthew Bays, the Internet Managing Editor of the Voice of America, will join us to talk about some of the changes that are coming. And then we'll have a review of the Texan BT-398BT. We have this and more, so stay tuned.
Media Network Plus, tickling your knobs. All right, come on, guys, get your mind out of the gutter. You know that I meant radio knobs. Oh, really, the minds of this smutty audience. First, here's Paulette with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
After almost 2 years of preparations, the Rwandan parliament has launched its radio station, Radio Inteko, on FM 101.5. The radio station was officially launched amid celebrations from a cheerful audience of senior government officials and a blend of local musicians. During the event, the minister in charge of cabinet affairs, Prote Musoni, noted that the general public will be directly connected to parliament. This development is timely because for the public, parliament is just a call away. There is direct access. People will no longer have to wait for updates on government businesses, said Musoni amid applause. This is in line with government's desire of creating awareness by disseminating vital information regarding various policies, said Musoni, who is also in charge of media. The radio station was established with the support of United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, and the UK Department for International Development. Swaziland plans to crack down on criticism of King Mswati III by making it illegal to badmouth Africa's last absolute monarch on Facebook and Twitter, said the Justice Minister. We will be tough on those who write bad things about the king on Twitter and Facebook. We want to set an example, Justice Minister Magwagwa Gamidze told the Senate. The minister said government was finalizing a law that will make it illegal to speak badly of the king on social media networks, and that it would soon come to the tiny mountain kingdom's parliament, which rubber stamps legislation. Mswati has faced growing criticism and unprecedented public protests over the last year due to a financial crisis that has pushed the kingdom to the brink of bankruptcy. Gamedzi was responding to Senator Thuli Masani, who on Thursday said people continuously wrote terrible things about the nation and its authorities on social media. It's like the moment Swazi people cross the border to neighboring countries, they begin to go on a campaign to disrespect their own country and king, said Masani. Surely there is something that must be done with them. There must be a law that can take them to task, he said. Brussels is willing to bear the costs of Portuguese-language broadcasts on Euronews for 2 years, so long as state-owned broadcaster RTP maintains its shareholding in the pan-European news channel and pays its annual fees, said Vice President of the European Commission, Viviane Reding. RTP will also have to guarantee to keep the broadcast going long after the 2-year period of assistance comes to an end. Portugal, through RTP, pays about 1.8 million euro a year to ensure the multilingual news channel broadcasts in Portuguese, but government cutbacks have put that service at risk. RTP has a 1.4% stake in Euronews and pays 360,000 euro a year in fees. the Netherlands has shipped a container with a mobile radio studio to Sierra Leone. The Radio Netherlands Training Center donated the studio to War Child, an organization that assists children and young people in war zones. There's a complete radio studio inside the container. Children and young people in Sierra Leone will use the studio to broadcast their own radio programs. The Radio in a Box concept is the brainchild of Radio Netherlands worldwide. It was originally designed to enable producers in disaster zones to get back on the air in the wake of an emergency. In the past, these mobile studios were sent to Indonesia, where there was an urgent need for radio broadcasts after the tsunami in 2004. RNW no longer needs these radio containers because it has built even more compact studios. RNW has one remaining radio container and is thinking of where it would be most useful. Special thanks to Andy Sennett at the Radio Netherlands Worldwide Media Network blog for the material used here today. For more reports from Andy, check out his blog, http://blogs.rnw.nl/media network. Or you can find a link for them at www.pcjmedia.com.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus on shortwave, satellite, and the internet from PCJ Radio. You can also listen to us on Stitcher. Here's Bob Zanotti with more details.
You can hear PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news, talk, and entertainment mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher from the App Store. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
At the beginning of this month, Keith attended the 25th anniversary of the SWL Winterfest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. So, Keith, tell us, what was it like?
It was, like I said in the intro on today's show, it was a ball. For me, it was also very personal because there was a lot of people that were there, people who I knew 20 years ago, people who I'd worked with even 25 years ago. We hadn't seen each other in years. And it was a really nice opportunity to meet them again. So from that aspect, from a personal aspect, it was a ball. From the aspect of forums that took place, it was also very, very interesting. There were so many forums on different aspects of radio, everything from amateur radio to pirate radio to internet radio. Radio Free Asia was there. A woman by the name of Janice Law, who we'll hear on a future edition of the program, has worked at different peacekeeping missions in Africa, and she was there to talk about the role that radio plays, for example, in a newly formed state like South Sudan. So there was a lot of stuff to go on. And what was nice is that if you, let's say, went to a forum and you wanted to have a break, you just go into the hallway and you get into a discussion with somebody. You get in touch with many people. That's what it was like. I mean, from early in the morning, from, say, 7 o'clock in the morning when people were eating breakfast until 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, that's what people were discussing. We're discussing radio. There was almost no down point, I could say.
Well, and you had an extra day to do it in too, didn't you?
That's right. This year was the 25th anniversary, so they extended it by one day. So it was on a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Now, because of the extra day and maybe because some people were working and everything, most people did show up on the Friday. There still was a very large turnout on the Thursday itself. And just to give you a little idea of what it was like, on the Friday, I had stepped outside of the hotel where it was taking place to have a little bit of a break, and I was walking back in, and I saw this gentleman with his wife, and he came up to me and he said, "Keith, it's finally nice to meet you." It's the kind of thing that, you know, like conferences take place and are very formal and stodgy and everybody there is wearing suits and like, you know. This was very different. It was very laid back and people were just having a good time.
So it's kind of like old homecoming week for you, meeting all these old friends for the first time.
Well, you know, the other thing as well, because it's been going on for 25 years, there are some people that have been going for all 25. And for them to go, it's, again, to meet people that they only meet once a year. So, you know, in some ways it was funny because there's a lot of older gentlemen that were there and older women that were there. And they go because it's a way to connect up with old friends. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the environment. I mean, I think the only way to describe it, it's like a big family reunion that takes place once a year, except the family is not dysfunctional. It's a normal family to get together and discuss their passion, which is radio. I mean, yes, there are some odd characters that did show up, characters that I certainly will never forget. And, you know, I've been back home now for a couple of weeks. And, you know, I was thinking, you know what? I'm actually thinking maybe even going next year because it was a ball. Personally, myself, I felt the whole thing was a little bit too short.
Were there any surprises that took you by surprise?
Do you mean in the way of people or forums?
Either or both.
Well, you know, surprises. There were a number of surprises because a lot of the forums were very informal. Dan Srebnik, who listens, he was taking part in a discussion on internet radio that was fascinating because it looked at how internet radio or Wi-Fi radio was when it began. And, you know, we then looked at it at how it is today. And everybody that was there was putting their hands up and getting involved in the conversation. You know, you have a panel, let's say, right? But the panel doesn't just, say, hog the whole forum. It also involves everybody that is there. So it really is an all-inclusive thing. Now, that I found very surprising because I've been to other radio conferences before and discussions about radio where it's really only the panel that's involved and you can ask questions, but that's about it. But this was one of the things that I liked because everybody was getting involved.
Okay, so you had some interesting times, some good reconnecting. Was there anything that that was occurring that maybe you want to be a little careful talking about?
I suppose you're referring to pirate radio. Yes, there were three pirate stations on the air during the conference. And this is a tradition going back to the first one.
Wow.
And these stations were a lot of fun. And even myself, I, you know, keep it quiet, but I had one going as well. Now,
no.
Just to tell you how funny it was, because there was one gentleman there, and I don't remember his name, but he works for, believe it or not, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission in the United States. Now, if people overseas are not familiar with the FCC, in the UK they have an organization called Ofcom. In Canada it's called the CRTC, or Canadian
Radio, Television, Telecommunications Commission.
Right, you say it off you roll it off your tongue a lot better than I do. So they regulate the airwaves. Anyway, there was a guy there from the FCC, and we were talking, and then he said, "Oh, he was from the FCC," and I kind of like, "Oh, we were just talking about pirate radio. What, did I say anything wrong?" And he said to me, he said, "Don't worry, I'm here as a private citizen, so you don't have to worry." So anyway, getting back to what I was just saying a moment ago, I decided to visit one of the guys operating one of these little stations that he was operating it from his hotel room. And this was, I have to say, it was like walking into a Mr. Wizard experience that had gone wrong. One of the other things about the SWL Fest that's actually quite interesting is not just the forums that take place, but also the radio activity. And you're saying to yourself, wait a second, what do you mean by radio activity? Well, we have to be quiet about it, you know, but there are, of course, a number of pirates on the premise, myself included. We're going to be heading to one of them right now to look at his setup. It is quite fascinating. In some ways, it makes it look like a Dr. Wizard experience going mad. So I'm standing in front of the door right now. Room 547. Unlock. one of the most interesting things I've noticed so far about the SWL Fest is there's going to be a number of different pirates that are going to be showing up. And you have a setup here that when I looked at it yesterday, I was like, this is Mr. Wizard on some type of medication.
Yeah, this is definitely not your typical FM setup. Most of the things, like self-contained units. Like I have a Panaxis FME 500 that I bought as a kit, 1995. And it's in its case, but there's no cover on it, so it's kind of open and you can see the guts. Then there's an amplifier that amplifies it like up to 15 watts. And as you can see, I have an inadequate size heatsink, so I have these big metal clamps on there to help take the heat away.
Okay, and this is safe, right?
Oh, yeah. It's just drawing heat from the aluminum into the clamps because it's kind of that needs to be.
Mm-hmm. So how are you feeding everything? I see a laptop next to it, but you were showing me a really interesting software yesterday.
Oh, yeah, Stereo Tool, which is pretty cool. It's basically a Winamp plugin, or you could use it with like Sam Broadcaster. And it has like the, you know, the your input, how much audio you're putting in and how much audio you're pushing out. It has right here the azimuth. You could correct that, you mm-hmm. know, correct your stereo if you need to be. If it's like an old tape that has the bias, you know, with the shifting back and forth, mm-hmm. you know, different things, like all kinds of multiband compression. Look at all the sliders. I mean, look at all that stuff right there.
The thing that's really interesting about this, and this is I don't even know how to describe it, but you're also broadcasting in RDS.
And this is the best part. Not only RDS, but this program right here is generating the stereo pilot tone uh-huh. for it to be stereo. It's just a mono output, a composite actually is what it's called. It goes into that, which is wired to accept the composite audio from here, which is, you know, the basically all your audio intelligence that's encoded in the 19 kilohertz pilot tone. And also the RDS, you can input your own thing, like I have right here, WBZO 87.9, SWL Fest Special Event Station, and those are all separate. They will scroll just like blink one per time there.
WBZO.
So here, let me ask you then, how did you get interested in this? What started it all? Did you just wake up one day and say, I want to have a radio station?
I don't know. I was always a big-time radio listener, okay? And I guess I was always the type of person that said, gee, you know, I could do this better, or I have an idea that I'd like to do this, you know, and I think I could play better music or come up with something better, you know? So I did research on other pirates that were in the UK on FM. But I never thought about like shortwave or medium wave or anything like that. And then I was in high school and somebody said, I know where to find a transmitter. Because I'd always be talking to my friends, yeah, let's get on the radio. Turns out it was a signal generator. So I took the signal generator and tried it. Didn't really do much. And somehow over time I managed to use like cable TV amplifiers, and the Radio Shack used to have an FM amplifier. It was a 25 dB gain, you know, you hook it up to your antenna, your receive antenna, and to your receiver. Well, I put it backwards, like push the signal out towards the antenna mm-hmm. from the signal generator, and I was able to get like a couple mile radius with that, you know.
That's simple.
Yeah, but the funny thing was the transmitter drifted. Well, the signal generator was very drifty, so it didn't stay on frequency. It drifted quite fast. The only digital tuner I had to check to see if I was on frequency was up in my car. So I would run from the basement all the way up, press tune, seek. It would go by, come down again, just barely touch the button, mm-hmm. and go back and forth and do that.
And did anybody look at you and go, Steve's having a breakdown of some kind?
My friend would ask me, well, what do you need to do that for? I said, well, if someone's going by and they scan, they're not going to get the signal because they're going to go right by if it's between. You know, I said, we got to pick up potential listeners that just might be happen to be scanning their signal right now, mm-hmm. which would probably be nothing because it was in the middle of nowhere and there wasn't much people.
So I'm looking at this right now and it really looks extraordinary. What about the antenna? Where is the antenna?
Oh, the antenna.
Let's get to the antenna, actually.
Okay.
Antenna, make it from magic. Antenna.
If I'm not mistaken, this looks like some type of old TV antenna.
It is. It's a recycled TV antenna that was in the trash. Janice and I, remember we pulled that one out, or you found it and pulled it out of the trash?
Oh, is that the one?
Yeah, yeah. One day it was in the trash. So it made it to the back of the yard, and it sat there for a long time, and I felt inspired. I felt inspired one day, and I found this plan online. So I decided I'm going to make it entirely out of that that old TV antenna.
Really, when I see it all, I look kind of worried, because at the other side where you have the transmitter, I'm like, I'm just afraid to be around here. And then I see this, it's like I'm afraid to blow on it in case of fear of falling over.
It's pretty solid.
Well, you do have a note on it. It says, please do not touch or move this. Thanks.
Well, yeah, because yesterday the maid bumped it first, because I was down in my car, like we were saying about driving around, checking the signal around the parking lot. I was checking it, and I could hear it like cutting in and out, because I just left the room, and the maid was up here. She came in. So I was like, uh-oh, the maid's bumping stuff.
So the maid hasn't been back yet today.
Well, you know, here's a funny story. This morning I was putting out something, and I had a microphone connected up, and the maid came in early. And her talking was, she was just talking to us at random, and I was trying to do something, and it was just going on the air. And then she realized, why is my voice coming out of the radio over here?
Really? Oh, man.
Oh, no, that's funny.
I wonder what she thought then.
Well, what does she think of anybody? I mean, you walk into a room, you see something like this, you see all these wires being strung around everywhere, you just... What it must be going through their mind.
And especially this setup, because this is, like you said, it's like some kind of weird, almost like a mad scientist or something put it together. Because it's not your, you know, your average, you know, I mean, there's like nice, you can buy nice units and people have their nice coax and stuff. Well, I always had to do things on a budget because I never had a lot of money. So I had to put things together whichever way I could. Mm-hmm. And they usually work, and they usually work pretty damn good. But if you look at them, they're kind of like, wow.
Kind of sketchy.
Yeah, but boy, they work though.
Have you ever had any type of mishap?
Yeah, actually. I'm doing some shortwave pirating with a big old 1957 Johnson Viking Valiant. And I was pushing it a little too hard, and there were some capacitors right down near the bottom, underneath the chassis. And they blew, and they caught on fire. And I'm broadcasting. All of a sudden, there's smoke coming up. And I go to hit the switch to turn it off, and I realize as I'm doing that, I see the flame shooting up out of the back. You know, I'm like, what the hell do I do now? You know, I can't pour water on it. I don't know what I did. I think I just stood there like an idiot, and then it went out because it just eventually burned the capacitor. But
it just kind of burned itself out.
It burned itself out. There was no more fuel left.
It burned your house down.
Well, it did leave. I had it on a Formica table, and it did leave. There's a burn hole that's about as big as a quarter. They're a constant reminder of that time when that capacitor kind of caught on fire.
So is this the only setup that you have, or do you have others as well?
This is the only thing I usually bring here, is just a little FM, but I have quite an extensive, you know, HF pirate operation somewhere.
Even for shortwave?
Oh, yeah, especially for shortwave.
And what kind of power do you have on that?
It's that Johnson Viking Valiant, which 250 watts.
So with a 250 watt HF transmitter, what kind of distance do you get on that? Or does it really it's like FM, it really depends on the antenna.
It depends. Uh-huh. You know, it's definitely the antenna is a big part of it too, but it's just the conditions, just like anything else. I mean, there was times when I was heard from the East Coast to the West Coast with signals that were like 40 over S9 on one particular occasion, but usually it's about a 500 mile radius. Using 7 megahertz, you know, 43 meters.
Small stations like the one you're running here and the one I'm running in my room at 88. I actually changed to 88.2 because I was getting interference from 88.5.
Oh, there you go. You're on the international, the Euro band there.
Yeah, so I moved down a bit. You know, E-Skip. Oh. With this kind of station, would it happen as well that just by chance it would just go so far only for a few minutes and then return back to normal?
You know, I think it's entirely possible. Most of the e-skip, I like to do a lot of that too when the season comes around. But when you look up the stations, most of them are 50, 100 kilowatts. And, you know, and they really have the drive to get up there and come right back down. you know. But there have been stations that have been translators, and I think even people have heard LPFMs via eSkip with 20, 30 watts. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely possible, I guess, depending on the intenseness of the ionization, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, because I think, like, right now, your station and the one that I'm running, the antennas are inside the room, inside a building with steel and concrete. But I'm surprised at how far we can still reach. Last night when I was heading out to dinner at the mall, not far from the hotel, I brought a radio with me, and the signal only cut out just as I was crossing the street.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty good. Considering, like you said, being inside this Faraday cage that they call a hotel.
I mean, imagine how far we'd go if we actually put the antennas on the roof.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had them up on the roof at the other, at the Culpsville, mm-hmm. at the inn at Towamencin. I actually, 2 years ago, this very antenna, when I built it, they were remodeling the old Best Western, and I found some scrap metal in the dumpster, and I bolted it together, pieces. And I ended up taking off the screen, which I had to drill the screws out, because they were drills of screws you're not supposed to tamper with. So I drilled them out, took the screen off.
Which is the reason why the SWO Fest has never returned to that hotel.
You got that right. And I somehow, I hoisted it out the window, okay, and then I took this clamp and I clamped it to the window. And I was able to get this antenna above the parapet wall of the roof, which was perfect. However, when I was building it, or actually putting it out the window, I had a pair of vice grips, and I dropped them, and this was from the fourth floor, and just so happened to be down three floors was the owners or whatever superintendents of the motel, which was an Indian woman was outside, and I dropped it, and she jumped, and I stuck my head back in the window. I didn't want her to see where it came from, but obviously there's this antenna stuck out the window.
Remind me, actually, you know, if it does happen one day that I'm looking for somebody who's an engineer, never to hire you. Either you'll set the equipment on fire or you'll injure people with flying tools.
Yeah, well, I'm not certified. I might be certified with something else, but not in engineering.
He also takes apart household appliances to get wires or whatever he needs.
Oh, that must be nice.
No, he has no respect for any type of appliance or electronic device that's in anywhere within a mile. If he needs a part, he's going to take apart whatever he needs to find that part. So beware.
Well, there's a picture of me somewhere, an old Polaroid, of me sitting at my grandparents' dining room table, and I have their VCR completely apart. This is like 1982, you know?
He has to take stuff apart.
Oh, yeah, because I wanted to see how it worked, how it was built.
The question is, can you put it back together?
Most times, at that time, when I was 9 years old, absolutely not. But now, I try not to take things apart that I can't put back together.
More or less.
No, I'm pretty good with that now.
You never got the Fujitsu back together, that old laptop. There was parts missing you never lost
well,
track
there's
of.
There's a reason. That was different time.
that was
a more lost time.
The station that does not loaf around. We're WBZO.
And that was my conversation with one of the pirates operating at the SWL Fest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio.
The Voice of America, which along with the BBC World Service and Radio France International, is one of the most respected international broadcasters in the world. Just as other broadcasters, the VOA is also going through some changes. These include the reduction of HF frequencies and looking at new platforms to remain competitive. Now, they're not leaving shortwave. They're only redefining what platform is best to serve their audiences. So in areas where traditional radio plays an important role, shortwave will continue. But in areas where internet and mobile technology are penetrating the market, they are changing their strategy. But what about censorship from local governments? Countries like China, Iran, Syria, and others can and do switch off access to content from providers that they see as a threat to their regimes. It's a fine balance. Matthew Bays, the Internet Managing Editor of the VOA, talks about these challenges facing U.S. international broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. A tense situation in a French city. UN support for one effort to end the violence in Syria. The U.S. suspends efforts to recover the remains of service members missing in North Korea. I'm Ira Melman reporting from Washington. French news.
One of the areas that I've seen a lot of development in is, for example, mobile phone technology. In Africa, many countries now, to install landlines would be very expensive and near impossible, but mobile phones are taking off. Is this one area of growth that you're seeing, for example, like with some broadcasters like the BBC? The BBC phone app is extremely popular in those countries, Kenya, even Zimbabwe, where it's heavily censored sometimes and doesn't even work. The phone apps work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that mobile, not just that they've sort of leapfrogged technology where they didn't really ever have landlines in the first place, but I think you have to extend that to how people interact with digital technology. That also means that many people in our audience, in our target audiences, they never sit down in front of a desktop. We think about the internet as I'm going to sit down in front of my computer and I'm going to go visit a website. There are huge chunks of the world now who, other than internet cafes or at work, they've never had that experience. Their sole experience with the internet is on phones. Now, the technology in a lot of countries is still behind. Think about the old flip phones that we were using 5 or 6 years ago. They're WAP, that's Wireless Application Protocol. A lot of countries still use those types of phones. But we have seen an exponential growth in smartphones in a lot of countries in just the last probably 8 to 12 months, particularly with Android, iPhone in some parts of the world. But I think we have to think about that as an audience segment that is as different from desktop internet as desktop internet is different from broadcast. They have different readership patterns. They're interested in different things. They come in at different times of the day. And I think that a lot of outlets, not just in international broadcasting, but commercially, are still trying to figure that out. They're not quite sure. Do you come up with a really separate product for the mobile piece of it, or do you simply copy what you're doing for desktop?
What about censorship? We see this as a problem in many countries. China, for one, has the Great Wall, the Great Firewall of China, where they block off a number of websites, not just the VOA, Radio Free Asia, BBC Chinese, Deutsche Welle Chinese. It's a very long list. I've heard that the VOA, as well as the BBG, is working on a technology so people in China will be able to access this information. I mean, right now, you said that China's one of the number one markets. How do people access if the websites are being blocked?
Well, in English, we're not being blocked. About 17 or 18 months ago, they lifted blocks on the BBC, on the Voice of America, on dozens of commercial websites. Nobody quite knows why. The wall simply dropped one day.
For English.
For English. Now, that's not the case for Mandarin. We are still blocked in Mandarin. But in terms of circumvention, there's a certain sort of cat and mouse that goes on in the engineering department around this where there really is no way to stop countries from blocking us. The best thing that we can do is provide a suite of tools that allows people to get around the firewall, and not just to come to us, but to come to anyone that they want. So part of that is handing out proxy information. So you go through servers that allow you to route around the firewall. It can be as low-tech as something that's nicknamed SneakerNet. So SneakerNet is where somebody sneaks a USB stick into a country and starts passing around the information on it, and it never really gets onto the internet. There are protocols like the Tor network and the Onion network, which are sort of anonymization tools. And I don't want to get too deep in the weeds technically here, but the idea is you throw a lot of things at the wall, a few of them stick, and you have to constantly readjust your strategy.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like in the old days of the Cold War with the Soviet Union, put more frequencies on the air, maybe change a couple of frequencies every now and again, put more frequencies on the air. Eventually you may have 10. Two of them may get through or whatever.
Exactly. And you're constantly readjusting what your strategy is. Now, I'm on the news side of things, so I don't deal directly with that technology. That again, that's handled by an engineering office here. But I think it's something that hasn't been figured out yet, and it's a lot more challenging than simply saying, here are some proxy servers. I mean, if you look at Google's efforts to get into China about two years ago, they basically gave up. They went in and tried to conquer the search engine market there. They were up against a domestic competitor. China, incidentally, has a really interesting market when it comes to blocking, because rather than like a lot of countries like Iran, for instance, where they simply say, no, you're not allowed to use Facebook, no, you're not allowed to use Twitter, you're not allowed to do all on and on down the list. What China has done is to block sites like Facebook and Twitter, but then to say, now here's a domestic version of it. Here's Weibo instead of Twitter. So we have our own microblogging service. Don't use Western multiplayer games. We'll have Chinese-made games that you can use. And by the way, we're going to monitor all of these, and we own these. These are state concerns. So it's harder to get people to leave something that they already have that's a simulacrum of what U.S. companies are trying to put out, and that's what Google discovered. So when they went into that market and they tried to get a footprint as a search engine there, they ultimately pulled out. They failed. Because they couldn't really penetrate into the market, and then the Chinese government started causing serious problems for their operation. They may have even hacked into some of Google's systems to try to prevent them from making a footprint there. So they packed up and went home. So it's very, very challenging in some of these countries.
This is the Voice of America transmitter at Greenville, North Carolina. This is the Voice of America. From Washington, we bring you...
The VOA now is 70 years old. There's been a lot of changes along the way. What do you think, I mean, from what we've been talking about, the future of VOAs, do you think in 70 years from now, everybody will be connected to the internet? Hopefully everybody will be connected to the internet. Is that the way that it's going, or do you still see a time when there will be the more traditional forms of distribution?
I think there still will be some kind of traditional distribution. I mean, I've done digital media for 15 years now. I've just been working for VOA for 2 years. I came out of commercial media. I eat, breathe, and live this stuff. I still watch television. I still listen to the radio. I still read books. I think there will probably be a market for traditional broadcast products. I doubt it's going to be shortwave 70 years from now. I very seriously doubt that. What you may see is delivery over IP. So you may see high-quality, well-produced television and radio programs that are delivered over internet protocol. So instead of going out through these incredibly expensive broadcast towers, the same kind of programming, but it's sent out with more cost-effective means. If you look back 5 or 10 years ago, there was sort of this panic by the recording industry and the motion picture industry that the advent of delivery over IP was going to mean the death knell of professionally produced music or films coming out of Hollywood or out of other film centers around the world. It didn't mean that. Now, in the beginning, there was a panic. You had sites like Napster that came around and thought, oh, my God, everything's going to become free. Our model's going to collapse. Now it's a huge moneymaker, things like iTunes, where people can go in and purchase music directly through a storefront like that. And you talked about services that offer movies over IP. So that industry didn't go away. It just had to adapt. And that's what media has to do, including international broadcasters, is we have to make smart decisions about how are people consuming media now? How do we reach them in ways that we know they're consuming this stuff, rather than being wedded to sort of the old ways of doing things? And you think back to the people in the 1940s who sort of were the pioneers of international broadcasting, I guess the 30s, 40s, and 50s. They didn't think, well, we have to figure out how to put newspapers out around the world. They took an emerging technology, they hired really smart people, and they said, we're going to figure out how to make this work. We're going to use a technology that people are embracing now, and that's why they succeeded. So that's our challenge, is to do the exact same thing and try to make sure that we have a solid future going forward.
With the VOA's numerous websites in various different languages, what are they mostly accessing? Text, video, audio, or is it a combination of all three, or is there one that's, say, more popular than the others?
This may be surprising, but text is still king on the internet. Part of that is because search engines scan text. They don't scan pictures or video quite as well.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. But also, if you think about this, how quickly you can parse information when you're reading. So if you have an article and you want to get the gist of it, think about the structure of how an article is put together in print style. It's the inverted pyramid. So you start with the broadest information, and then you begin to narrow down. You can very quickly, and you can skim, you can skip, you can figure out the little pieces you want very quickly in 10 or 15 seconds get the gist of an article. It's harder to do that with audio and video. You have to grab the scrubber and you have to kind of jump along and try to sort of get the gist of the story that way. And because a lot of broadcast, what makes for good radio, what makes for good television, means that it's a different structure. And so you don't always get the information up front. Sometimes you have to kind of hunt around for it a little bit. So I think that for people who, A, are time-starved, which seems to be everybody these days, and B, for people who are paying for metered bandwidth or by the minute for internet, they still seem to gravitate towards text and photos. It's lower bandwidth, doesn't cost as much to push through. If you have a poor connection, you can get it a lot faster. And the information is easier to ingest. Now, all that said, there are cases of where audio, you can, especially if you have really good natural sound, it tells the story in a way that text can't, and video is obviously that times 10. I mean, sometimes there are stories that 10 seconds of video will give you the equivalent of a 5,000-word story. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to come up with, again, every story deserves its own treatment.
That's fast, any way you look at it. Thanks for joining us here on The Voice of America. Our program went by quickly as well. This has been International Edition. You can find us anytime on the internet at voanews.com. We hope you'll stay tuned. The latest world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Brenda Floyd. Sorry, Brenda, I'm stuttering around. Our engineer, Jesse Brooks, and John Ellison. I'm Steve Norman, trying to speak here in Washington. You guys have a great Thursday.
Keith was speaking with Matthew Bays, the Internet Managing Editor of The Voice of America.
Now, over the last 2 years, we have seen a lot of cuts happen in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Sweden is long gone off shortwave. Czech radio, also gone. And others are cutting back on frequencies. It's a little strange that these decisions are being taken, because there are more receivers on the market than there ever was. Of course, last year there was the brand new SanGen ATS-909X that came out that we talked about. But the largest manufacturer of shortwave receivers is a company called Texan. When I say they are the biggest, they are huge. They are humongous. If I can think of another word, it would be that. They are absolutely massive. They have so many products, and they keep coming out with new ones all the time. This year, 2012, Texan will be coming out with a whole lot of new shortwave receivers. Many of them. Some of them are new designs. Some of them are replacements for other radios that they've already had out. One of them that they've had out for a while is the PL390. It's a nice little radio, has two speakers, and it's an excellent radio to travel with because you can put it in a suitcase or even in your hand luggage. It's very, very small. The replacement for this receiver is the PL398BT. Yes, the Texan PL398BT. It looks just like the PL390, almost the same. Really, it almost looks just identical. So you're saying to yourself, well, if it looks identical, why give it a different number? And what is the BT about? Well, I decided to get one of these receivers from Texan. And I have to say, I am really amazed with it. I am absolutely amazed. First of all, the radio has a temperature, right? It has a thermometer. You can tell what the temperature is if you need to know that, okay? The other nice thing about it, which we're seeing now a lot in many shortwave receivers, including SanGen, is that you can charge nickel metal hydride batteries inside the radio. You don't have to take the batteries out anymore. You can just leave them in and plug it in and charge it. The next thing that is amazing about this radio is it really incorporates new technology. When I mean new technology, I'm talking about the smartphone devices that are so around us. Things like the iPhone and other smartphones, the iPad, you can use on this radio. And you're saying to yourself, how is that possible, Keith? Well, BT, at the end of PL398BT, what does BT stand for? BT stands for Bluetooth. Yes, this new radio from Texan has the Bluetooth feature, which means if you're traveling, for example, and I'll give you an example right now. Let's say you're going to Indonesia, okay, and you're, let's say, in West Java, somewhere maybe in the countryside. And guess what? Yes, shortwave reception is perfect. There are no tall buildings. There are no high-tension power lines. So picking up broadcast off shortwave is very easy. And let's say you're there for a few days, and then you head to Jakarta, the capital of Indonesia, and you're staying at a very beautiful five-star hotel on the, I don't know, maybe 10th or 11th floor, maybe 42nd floor, who knows? Obviously, the windows don't open, and obviously, because of the surroundings, shortwave reception is going to be, well, bad. That's you can't put it any other way. It's going to be bad. Even if you use a wire antenna that you hang near the windows, it's still going to be bad, right? So if you're in the hotel, it's more than likely you're going to listen to radio probably off your laptop or your iPhone or your iPad. Now, like most smartphone devices and even the iPad, you can listen to it without headphones, but the speaker, it's really small, right? It's really small and doesn't sound too good. Well, if you have this radio, and maybe the day before you were listening to the BBC World Service or the Voice of America on shortwave, and then you're in your five-star hotel and you want to listen to some music online or even watch a DVD off your laptop, but you don't want to wear headphones, you can use this radio as external speakers, and they sound, considering how big they are, they sound pretty decent. They really sound pretty decent. All you need to do is pair up the device with your Bluetooth laptop or smartphone or iPad. And it's very easy to do. On the back of the receiver, there's a button that says Bluetooth and radio. So if you're on radio, you leave it there. If you want to use Bluetooth, you switch it over. Then you open the settings on your Bluetooth device, search for it, and it will come up as PL398BT. You pair it, and that's all you need to do. That's really all you need to do. It works with a distance of about 2 meters from around the smart device or your laptop. And the other nice thing, actually, which I think is really kind of cool, let's say you've paired it with your iPhone, right? And you leave your iPhone maybe on a desk in the hotel or at home. It could be on the table, right? And you're in your working space and you're listening to music and you're writing something or reading something. If you want to change track, if you're listening to something off iTunes, for example, you don't need to do it from your phone. You can do it right from the radio. In the back of the radio, there are three buttons: previous, next, pause, play. And these will control your iTunes and also on your computer and on your iPad as well. Fascinating feature. And let's say you're watching a DVD, right, on your laptop in a hotel somewhere or at home even. And you're watching it in the kitchen, but you don't want to use headphones. Well, you can just use this radio. It is absolutely fantastic. I am really amazed with it. Now, what don't I like about this radio? Because I have been raving about it. There is one thing that I really don't like about it. Only one thing. But it's not really with this radio. It's with other Texan radios as well. And this is something that I really don't like. And I think it's kind of, if I can put it this way, dumb. The radio comes, like I said, with three Texan nickel metal hydride batteries. Sounds great. But they are only 1,000 milliamps each. Which means, after about 3 or 4 days of play, you have to charge the batteries again. Not very good, guys. And I don't understand why you would do that. At least put a minimum 2,000 milliamp batteries inside. Okay, that is our review of the brand new Texan PL398BT. And as I said at the beginning of this, Texan is coming out with some brand new receivers this year, and we will be reviewing each and every one of them. So you'll have to stay tuned and find out. And if you want to know more, by the way, about this radio and see what it looks like, go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com, and click on PCJ Radio Reviews, and you will see the latest installment of the Media Network Plus video where we review this radio. Time now to find out what propagation conditions will be like. Here's Dan Hensley.
On March 31st, we'll see a 10.7 centimeter flux of 125. On April 1st, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130. On April 2nd and 3rd, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 135. From April 4th to April 6th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 140. The A index will be 5 for the first 3 days of this forecast, covering the days of March 31st, April 1st, and April 2nd. On April 3rd and 4th, we'll see an A index of 8, with an A index of 5 on March 5th and 6th. The KP index will be 2 for the first 3 days of this forecast, covering the days of March 31st, April 1st, and April 2nd. On April 3rd and 4th, we'll see a KP index of 3, followed by a KP index of 2 on April 5th and 6th. Sunspot groups 14, 36, 44, and 45 are in view at this time. No crackling of the sunspot groups has been observed, and no threat of solar flares is expected. There are two coronal holes on the Earth-facing side of the Sun, and a solar wind from these coronal holes will reach Earth by the end of March. No disturbance to propagation should occur as a result of these winds. On March 27th, NASA launched 5 rockets in the Atrex project that sprayed the edges of space with a non-harmful visible gas to study solar winds at the edge of space. Results of this study are pending. Stay tuned to Media Network Plus, and I'll inform you of these results when they are final.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. Well, guess what, Paulette? We are out of time.
Again?
We are now out of time, but, you know, I have to say one thing to you.
Oh?
Happy birthday.
Oh.
So how old are we? How old are we?
You think I'm going to tell you?
It's okay, everyone. It's okay, everyone. We'll just post it on our website.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, we are at the end of today's show. If you want to get in touch with us, Paulette, what is the easiest way?
Probably email us, mnp@pcjmedia.com.
And if you want to listen to all past editions of the show, go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. Again, that's www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. So for me, Keith Parro in Taipei, Taiwan.
And me, Paulette McQuarrie in Vancouver, Canada.
We hope we'll see you all again very soon.
Bye for now.
73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.